Welcome to Mid-Century Living, your weekly nostalgia podcast about the best of technology and culture from the mid-20th century.
Welcome to episode 27 of Mid-Century Living, the show where we talk all about the best of the mid-20th century and how to add vintage vibes to your modern life. We're your hosts, Jackie.
And Gonzalo. Thank you guys for joining us today. So, welcome to part two of our series on the Apollo program. That's right, part two. So if you've not yet listened to last week's episode where we covered a little bit about the history of the Apollo program and Apollos 1 through 10, go check out episode 26 in your favorite podcast platform. So I know we're all anxious to get to Apollo 11 to talk about the big one, the mission where we landed on the moon. So let's jump into the command service module and join astronauts Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin, and Michael Collins in Apollo 11. So this was the mission in July 16th, 1969, where we finally reached the moon. Although I kind of wish that we had done this on July 4th instead of July 16th.
That would have been so good.
Yeah. But at 2017 UTC, which is Universal Time, which in July would be at 3:17 p.m., so 15:17 Central Standard Time, which is UTC minus five. Lunar module pilot Buzz Aldrin landed the lunar module named the Eagle on the moon's surface in an area named Tranquility Base. Commander Neil Armstrong was the first human to set foot on the lunar surface, which for some reason happened 6 hours and 39 minutes after landing.
For some reason, we don't know why.
I could not find why it took so long from landing to walking on the moon. Nerves probably were a big part of it. I mean, I would be nervous. But I don't know why. Astronaut pilot Michael Collins remained in the command module named Columbia as it orbited the moon for 21 hours and 36 minutes before the Eagle rejoined him. So remember that the lunar module, if you guys remember from last episode, is the part of the spaceship that detaches from the command module to land on the moon. And that one only fits two people. So Michael Collins drew the short straw and had to stay in the command module while Armstrong and Aldrin landed on the moon. And Armstrong and Aldrin would spend about 2.25 hours exploring the area where they landed. They named it the Sea of Tranquility, and they will bring back 475 pounds of lunar material with them. And this was all broadcasted on live TV to a worldwide audience, and this is where Armstrong said the famous words, "This is one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind." So why don't we go ahead and listen to Buzz Aldrin saying these famous words.
I'm going to step off the land now. It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
Yay.
Yeah. And this mission was a huge success. It ended 8 days, 3 hours, 18 minutes, and 35 seconds after its start when the three astronauts splashed down in the Pacific Ocean. It also served to fulfill the national goal set by President JFK in 1961, a goal that the president unfortunately never saw happen after being assassinated in 1963.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah. But it's really a huge deal. I mean, apart from the fact that, like, we landed on the moon, also, we televised a live broadcast from the moon, and I couldn't get my Wi-Fi to work an hour ago.
That is a very good point.
So, but that takes us to Apollo 12. Apollo 12 in November of 1969 was the second mission to land on the moon, and it's a little hard to discuss more missions after the rush that was Apollo 11. It's like Apollo 12 was like, yeah, we know this already.
So that one went well, though?
Yeah, that one went well. No issues. Apollo 13 in April 1970 was meant to be the third mission to land on the moon, but had to be aborted 2 days into the mission. Now, Apollo 13, you guys may have heard of it. There's movies about it. It's the movie that inspired this episode. But what happened here was an oxygen tank ruptured, disabling critical electrical and life support systems after a routine stir of the tanks. The crew, astronauts Jim Lovell, Jack Seward, and Fred Hasey, had to figure out how to live in space for 4 days, facing hardships like lack of oxygen and a buildup of carbon dioxide and a crippled ship. And the crew made it back to Earth safely, but surely shaken up, on April 17th.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I've actually never seen that movie. I'm the worst.
Oh, you've never seen it? It's great. No. It's got Tom Hanks in it and Bill Paxton and Kevin Bacon. And that other guy whose name I always forget, starts with an S. It's like Guy something. He's always mean in all the movies except for this one.
Give that a quick goog. I've heard that new verb now, and that's all I want to use.
Gary Sinise.
Gary, yes.
So I would recommend watching that.
I mean, that's one heck of a cast.
Yeah, I mean, it was directed by Ron Howard. So.
Yeah, I know. There's a lot of like really big gaps in my movie knowledge. I need to fill those. I need to fix that.
So, Universal, if you want to sponsor us for sponsoring your movie, you know.
For that shout out.
Yeah.
We are open to sponsorship opportunities.
Yes. Anyway, the Apollo program kept going on. In January 1971, the third mission to land on the moon went up. Apollo 15 in July 1971 was the fourth mission to land on the moon and the first to use the lunar rover. So for more on the lunar rover, check out episode 15, Electric Vehicles Through the Mid-Century. Link in the show notes.
Yes.
So Apollo program kept going. Apollo 16th in April 1972 was the fifth to land on the moon. And Apollo 17th in December of 1972 was the final mission of the Apollo program, the sixth and most recent time that humans set foot on the moon. Also the first time a geologist makes it to the moon, astronaut Harrison Schmitt.
Oh, how exciting for him.
Was he an astronaut or a geologist?
I mean, geologist, but if you remember from a NASA episode, if you are conducting exploration or if you are conducting testing or academic research in space, you are an astronaut.
Right, so true. So that is all incredible work, but apparently the last time we visited the moon was in the early 70s. How is the Apollo program still relevant today?
Well, that's a good transition because space exploration is still a huge thing today. I mean, we may have reached the moon, but we're constantly learning how big the universe is. The moon is relatively close to us. It's basically just a hop, skip, and a jump away. But the Apollo program had a huge impact, not just on the USA, but also on the world. So specifically to the mid-century, right? It's no surprise that the Apollo program had a huge impact then while it was happening, because no one had been to the moon before. It's all new. So the USA was in the midst of a war against the Soviet Union, right? The Cold War, which while there was never any actual fighting between the two countries, like directly, there was a lot of angst, a lot of challenging from each side. And the US government had been somewhat made to look a fool after the Soviets launched Sputnik into space. There's a blow to the US and by extension, a blow to democracy, right? So the US government was dealt another blow when we lost the race to be the first human in space, once again, listening to the Soviets. So the government really needed a big win, which is what inspired JFK to give that motivating speech we talked about in the last episode and set the nation's goal for not only taking a man to the moon, but beating the Soviets there and ensuring that our astronaut made their way back home safely. So the Apollo program impacted the government economically, obviously. It cost roughly $26 billion U.S. dollars on employing people, creating technology to get us to the moon, and then actually launching the spacecraft off the surface of the planet.
My goodness, that's a lot of money. And it sounds even more impressive when you estimate that the amount in today's money would probably be closer to $260 billion U.S. dollars.
I know, it's ridiculous. But wait, there's more. The impact the Apollo program had on the people in society, I think, is even more impressive. Because, again, during the mid-century, the Cold War is going on, right? It's perhaps the last time people in the USA were united against a common enemy with such national pride. It was all about the USA versus the Soviets, democracy versus communism. Some would even say good versus evil.
So true. I think the amount of national pride towards the space program was ever as high as it was in the 60s.
Yeah, I mean, there's an innumerable amount of support from everyone in the USA, and I'm sure everywhere else as well, for the astronauts. Upon landing, Apollo 11 astronauts received a phone call from President Nixon saying that, quote, "For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives," end quote. The cultural phenomenon of Apollo 11's landing, over 500 million people globally watched the moon landing at a time where most households only had one TV. And then in the mid-century, everything ended up being space-themed. I mean, even the sign got a taste of it. Have you ever seen cars from the 1960s?
Yes, and as we have mentioned before, the Sputnik chandeliers, mid-century modern, I feel like there was a lot of spacey, streamlined chromes and rocket-shaped.
There's a lot of, yeah.
Kitchen canisters, even. Like, there was spacey design and everything.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of very cool influence on Disney parks as well. I didn't mention it much in the Disneyland episode, but there was a flight to the moon simulation in the original Disneyland. There was, like, the whole Tomorrowland concept is all when we're already living in space, because we already went to the moon, so this is the clear next step. It was a very big deal.
Yeah, it was a very big deal. But unfortunately, interest began to wane by the 1970s. The Apollo missions were all very close together, just sometimes months between launches. And it quickly made space exploration seem almost commonplace. I mean, it was relegated from the front page above the fold to the inside of the newspaper.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't really until Apollo 13 came around that people began to make a big deal out of it again. And it was such a big deal that the US and NASA had essentially lost 3 astronauts in space that people began to talk about it again. But after the safe return of Apollo 13, and once again going back to lower public interest in the Apollo program and space exploration, President Nixon and Congress redirected the funding for the program to funding the Vietnam War. Yes. And that meant that Apollo 17 became the last mission to fly for Project Apollo. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, that's okay. That yikes can just float out there. So how about the impact on space exploration in the modern age?
So it's no secret that space exploration kept increasing. Even if Congress ended the funding for the Apollo program, technology was inspired or developed alongside the space program that we still use today. So, for example, things like fuel technology, a fuel cell like the one used in Saturn V rockets, which are 2 to 3 times more efficient than conventional combustion engines. It is now being looked at as a clean energy alternative. Even Toyota is researching bringing fuel cells into the car market. The heat resistant or heat shield technology needed to safely bring the spacecraft full of humans back to Earth through the atmosphere was designed to withstand temperatures of 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit, which has found applications in firefighting and in the industrial safety market. Communication tech used to be able to talk to the astronauts in real time, developed out of a time period where cell phones did not exist, and most households only had one landline. I mean, imagine that. Apollo's water and air purification technologies and other environmental controls are now the standard in managing indoor air quality, and even used in surgical settings. And who can forget astronaut ice cream, right? Freeze-dried foods and Teflon came out of the Apollo program.
And Tang? Is this where Tang came from, or is Tang later?
I don't know. I didn't come across that in my research.
Good. It's terrible. My grandma used to buy it.
I like Tang.
You do?
Yeah.
I think maybe that's why I don't like oranges. Because I grew up drinking Tang. It tastes like emergency. Like, that's what emergency reminds me of.
I love it. Yeah. Anyway, Apollo program also inspired generation of children and young adults by inspiring them to be interested in science, engineering, and astronomy. And NASA continued to seek out space exploration, developing the space shuttle, which flew during the 1980s and 1990s. And they are currently still working on space exploration. Currently, Project Artemis is under development and is intended to take people back to the moon in 2024. Yes, the same year we are recording this episode.
Exciting.
Yeah. Another goal of Artemis is to build sustained human presence on the moon by 2028.
That's scarier than exciting. I don't know about that.
Oh, you think it's scary to have human presence on the moon?
I mean, what do they mean? Like, we're going to put little colonies on it?
Yeah, that's exactly what they mean, I believe. Listeners, you can't see Jackie's face of fear and distrust. So you may not like this part then, Jackie. But so we are recording on March 16th, 2024. And not even a month ago, on February 22nd, 2024, Odysseus lunar lander, nicknamed Odie, landed on the moon, becoming the first spacecraft leaving the USA to land on the moon since 1972. So this uncrewed lander from Intuitive Machines in collaboration with NASA has a goal to help prepare NASA and humans alike for lunar exploration under Project Artemis. So we're kind of seeing the same thing that happened with Gemini or Gemini and Apollo, but now we're seeing it with Odysseus and Artemis.
Cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I don't want to live there, but I'm glad they're exploring. That's all I got to say.
I don't know. I
don't know. I've seen a lot of sci-fi movies with like moon colonies and they're like struggling to terraform it and like, can't we just leave everybody alone? But
I think it would be fun. I just don't think I'm smart enough. Like, what am I going to do up in space? Like, teach people history or like design buildings or fly the plane?
It would be the same. It would be us again. But probably, right? I don't know.
We could be the first podcast.
For some reason, I feel better about terraforming Mars than I do about putting colonies on the moon. What if we mess up the oceans or something? Like, isn't the moon really important?
I don't know if it would have any effect on the ocean. I like the idea of the moon in the same way that the USA liked the Kingdom of Hawaii after the Spanish-American War. Go with me on this.
Okay.
Because back then they wanted Hawaii because it was a natural stopping point between the USA and controlling Asia. Right? So the idea with Hawaii was, hey, we're going to have people, like, this is like a natural, like, midway point. Now, the moon would serve the same purpose for people from Earth because you get out of Earth, which is incredibly difficult. You make it to the moon. Once you're in space, right? Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's going to take you forever to get places because it's really big. But I feel like it's like a nice little stopping point.
Interesting.
So, rocket scientists out there, if I'm wrong, please write in.
So how about the media?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the media and you mentioned it earlier and I wanted to cut you off, but I didn't. But in media, there's countless movies, TV shows, books, comic strips, and all kinds of media that have been inspired by space exploration. It can be argued that even science fiction has been inspired by this, although sci-fi like Flash Gordon have been around since the 1930s. There's a lot of movies about the Apollo program. Obviously, we talked about Apollo 13 already. That was the good and dramatic interpretation of the events that unfolded under Apollo 13 mission with Tom Hanks, the late Bill Paxton, and Kevin Bacon. There's a really cool Netflix animated movie called Apollo 10 and a Half, which I highly recommend. It's a really good film cataloging the, quote, top secret flight of a spaceship that was too small for adults and thus required a middle schooler to operate the ship. It was really well made. The animation is really amazing. And it's really cool because the movie itself kind of feels like a love letter to Houston from the writer-director.
Aww.
He grew up in near NASA during the 1960s, and it's really cool. And yes, U of H features part of it. It's like a scene. But anyway, it's really cool.
Neat.
There's other movies. Apollo 18, which is a sci-fi thriller about the scrapped Apollo 18 mission. So what if it hadn't been scrapped? Dun, dun, dun.
Interesting.
But that pretty much sums up the impact of the Apollo program. Have you ever seen any of these movies?
Nope.
Any final thoughts on us getting to the moon? I know you have strong feelings about it.
I actually think it's great that we're trying to get back there again. I am not interested in living there. And the idea of like putting little Earth colonies on the moon actually makes me nervous. I'm not quite sure why, but I just feel better about us like going to another planet than going to the moon. Like, I feel like we should leave the moon alone and let the moon do its moon job and like control the oceans and whatever the moon does. But the way you explained it about it kind of being a good midway rest stop, like, it's kind of like Bucky's long
road trip. Yes. Let's not make the moon Bucky's. But I see where you're going with this. Okay. My fear is, like, making it too, like, corporate. I don't want it corporate. Mm. But we're going to go into rabbit hole. So now that we've come to the present, it's time for our etiquette segment. So Jackie, what do we have today?
So today we have part two of dance etiquette from 1957. So the half of that etiquette tip that I saved for this episode is the etiquette of refusing a dance.
Oh.
So according to Amy Vanderbilt, no lady need dance with anyone if for some reason she doesn't care to. But she must always be polite in her refusal. So if she's hoping for another partner, she must say, "Thank you, but I don't believe I'm free right now." Or if she's tired, she should say so. She should say something like, "Thank you, but I'd like to rest a little. Won't you join me in sitting here?" If she really wants him to sit there with her, that is.
Okay.
At a large dance where there's a floor committee or a stag line, a man can always signal when he thinks he has danced enough of a duty dance. Or if he is stuck with a wallflower. Apparently you can have some sort of hand signal for that. She does not elaborate, however. Girls, of course, get stuck too during interminable dances where no one asks to cut in. If no relief seems in sight, either partner can suggest leaving the floor, usually under the pretext that there are too many couples dancing or that a drink or a talk or a walk in the air might be more fun than dancing at that moment.
Hmm.
If either partner feels inept at a particular dance and the music strikes up in that tempo, that is another quite acceptable excuse for sitting at a dance. So that's good. But a man never escorts a girl from the floor and leaves her unaccompanied, though she may always give him some polite excuse for leaving him once they're off the dance floor. And these are how to politely refuse a dance and get out of dancing situations. So believe we actually decided we were going to wait and vote on all of this dance etiquette at once. So, a quick refresher, last week's duty dance etiquette was every male guest has to ask the hostess and all of her family, including the grandmother, to dance at a private dance as a general courtesy. And at a supper dance, those who come together dance together, but can still dance with other people. And as supper time approaches, the girl's escort comes and rescues her from the current dance she's in and tells her it's time for dinner, or shall we have supper, is the way he'll phrase it.
Yes. So I like all these. I like the ones from the last episode. I like the ones from this one. I like that there's a mechanism for someone to say, like, no, I don't want to dance with you. But, you know, in a polite society way. That being said, I would hate to be on the receiving end of the no, I'm too tired to dance. But I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I like all of these, actually. I agree with you, kind of. Maybe we should abbreviate the duty dances or obligation dances from just the host of the party. Not the host of the party and all of the females in her family. Because that could get pretty tedious. Unless, of course, like at a wedding or something, if you know the whole family, that could be cute. But if you're
I feel like if you know them, it's different if you are like a family friend, because you're going to dance with them regardless.
Right.
But if you're like guest, you know, 243, like don't go and dance like with everybody. Also, how many parties do you have? 243 plus guests.
Yes. And I love that the women are allowed to just basically bow out of any dance they don't want to be in at all times. And so that's actually nice. And she did mention that there is some little out for men, like if you're stuck in a stag line or if you've been duty dancing long enough and you need to be rescued. But she doesn't elaborate on that, which is unfortunate. But as a person who doesn't enjoy dancing at dances, I love that there are just plenty of ways out in the refusing a dance section. So For the most part, I kind of like all these, except for that bit about dancing with everyone at the party.
Yeah, I like him too. I think we should give him the approval.
Yeah, all right, let's tentatively approve these, let's call it obligation dance etiquette tips.
I like that, obligation dance etiquette tips. So you guys have heard it here first. We are tentatively approving them pending our next invitation to a dance. And with that, guys, it looks like we have actually landed the command and service module. Thank you guys all for listening today. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to the show and tell a friend.
You can also follow us on Instagram at MCL Podcast. This is the best place to send us feedback and episode suggestions, so send us a DM anytime.
Yep. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we'll talk to you guys again next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Mid-Century Living. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at MCL Podcast. See you next Friday.